This past Sunday would have been President Gerald R. Ford's 100th birthday. He was the longest living and shortest serving President of the United States, with just shy of 2.5 years in the Oval Office. He was also the only president from Michigan. WKAR's Melissa Benmark spoke with James Kratzis, Deputy Director of the Gerald R. Ford Museum in Grand Rapids, to look back at Ford's life and legacy.
In 1974, when Nixon resigned, in the wake of the second biggest constitutional crisis in our country's history, and that is Watergate, this country felt down on itself, probably more so than any time I can imagine in my lifetime. Nobody trusted the government. Everybody was appalled at corruption. Everybody was appalled at what had happened in Washington, D.C. And that's August of 1974. Yet, in less than 2 years, we had the biggest party our country ever had. And that was the bicentennial. I don't know how much credit you give presidents and how much blame you give presidents for any good or bad, but you have to give credit to Gerald Ford, who set the healing process from that resignation of Nixon to our bicentennial, and he started it by taking the biggest hit upon himself, and that was pardoning Richard Nixon. So I think we have to give him a lot of credit for not only saving our pride in this country, but also saving the presidency.
I know he took a lot of heat for the pardon at the time, but it sounds like, in your opinion, that it may have been the right thing to do to start the healing process.
Well, I was one who was very upset that he pardoned Richard Nixon. I think at that time, I didn't understand it, and I don't think it was made real clear to the American people that when Richard Nixon accepted the pardon, he also confessed his guilt. That's all anybody in this country wanted, was Nixon to say, "I'm guilty."
Just say it.
Just say it. And by accepting the pardon, he did. If President Ford had not pardoned Richard Nixon, that trial would have gone on for 2, 3, 4 years. And would we want to be putting an ex-president on trial during our bicentennial? I don't think so. We needed to move on, and I think President Ford did a very courageous thing to do that. He thought it was the right thing, although many people at the time criticized him immensely for that, including Ted Kennedy and Bob Woodward. And since that time, late in President Ford's life, both Ted Kennedy and Bob Woodward said, "President Ford, you were right, and we were wrong." In fact, Ford, one of his prized awards that he ever got was the Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award, and that was for pardoning Richard Nixon. And Ted Kennedy said, "Time is a way of clarifying things, and Mr. President, you were right, and I was wrong."
It's interesting because some of his public persona was that he was a fairly mild-mannered man. And yet, it sounds to me like in reading up on President Ford that he had a pretty strong will when it came to doing what he thought was the right thing.
Absolutely, he did. There were several instances where he did what he considered the right thing. It didn't matter what anybody else thought. I'll give you another example. Not long after becoming president, he announced his clemency plan for Vietnam draft resistors. And where did he make that announcement? He chose as his forum the National Convention of the VFW. It wasn't like he made it in front of, you know, on a college campus.
Right.
He did it right in front of the VFW, and there were not a lot of happy people on the dais behind him. But that was him. He always wanted to confront his critics. You know, he also did the right thing at the end of the Vietnam War when Saigon was collapsing. Congress refused to appropriate any money, and yet Ford ordered the evacuation of so many of the Vietnamese friendlies there. And he worked hard to get every one of those Vietnamese relocated in the United States, because countries like Thailand, Laos, areas in Asia would not take them. So Ford made it so that they would come to the United States, and he called in friends. That's why there's such a large Vietnamese community here in Grand Rapids, because Ford called in favors across the country, and naturally he called in his hometown, Grand Rapids.
A person has to wonder a little bit if his compassion might have been maybe directed a little bit by the fact that he didn't necessarily have the easiest early life. You know, people know that Presidents Clinton and Obama came from less than ideal domestic situations, but I don't think it's as well known that President Ford did, too.
President Ford was actually born Leslie Lynch King Jr. in Omaha, Nebraska. His natural mother soon was married to Leslie Lynch King Sr., who was abusive both physically and verbally. And it was just a few days after giving birth to the young Leslie that the elder Leslie came into the bedroom, you know, brandishing a butcher knife, talking about harming his wife and infant child. Well, the mother, you know, quickly got her newborn, traveled to Chicago, hooked up with her parents, who then they all moved up here to Grand Rapids. And while she got a divorce, you know, one of those rare things
right
back then, and she met Gerald Ford Sr., a paint salesman here in Grand Rapids, and young Leslie became young Jerry. And, you know, he did have a hard start of his life, but he was blessed with a wonderful stepfather and a wonderful mother who instilled all those values of hard work and telling the truth. And he always said there were three rules in his house: work hard, tell the truth, and come to dinner on time. And he said, woe be to anyone who didn't abide by any of those three rules. He actually had a very loving family, and it was hardship during the Great Depression, because his stepfather did not prosper during the Great Depression as so many others did. But, you know, young Jerry persevered, worked hard and playing football, worked hard at his studies, went to U of M, went to Yale Law School, and as they say, the rest is history.
Ford was a representative from Michigan's 5th Congressional District for about 25 years and was Republican minority leader for a while. What were his legislative interests when he was in Congress? What were his projects?
They mirrored what he loved as a president, what he loved in college, and that was economics. There was nobody who understood a budget better than Gerald Ford. He vetoed 66 bills while he was in the presidency. Most of them were spending bills that he thought were pork and bad use of taxpayer dollars. So in Congress, he was always on the Appropriations Committee. That was one thing. He was very big into Appropriations Committee for NASA. He was greatly steeped in the space program, interested in the military. But he, again, going back to it, he was always looking to cut, you know, wasteful spending by anybody.
After his years as president, what was he active in his retirement?
He was active in a lot of things. And it's very hard to talk about President Ford without talking about Mrs. Ford.
Right.
They were more than just a couple. They were, you know, that singular couple. They were one and the same. They were inseparable. So he worked after the presidency. He worked a great deal to help the Betty Ford Clinic, Betty Ford Breast Cancer Awareness. But he also had his own personal agendas. I know he worked with Jimmy Carter on a number of occasions on supervising elections down in South America, Central America, and Africa. He had a lot of interest in that regard. But after so many years working, he enjoyed his retirement, too. He enjoyed golfing, and he enjoyed swimming every day, which he did almost every day of his life.
And he was the longest living president, so maybe we can learn from that.
Well, yes, you can. No two ways about it. It was amazing to me, even into his mid to late 80s, when he was standing, his shoulders were still rigid, straight back, just like you would expect from an athlete like him. He was always in great shape in his life, and like I said, he swam every day, I think, until into his 90s.
What do you believe the leaders of today could learn from his example, from his legacy?
Well, I think the biggest thing that politicians could learn today is his emphasis on bipartisanship. He worked very closely with both Republicans and Democrats when he was in Congress. There was a reason why he was chosen as vice president, because he was the one that could easily have gotten confirmation as vice president, and that was because he worked with both sides of the aisle. One of his best friends was later Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, one of the staunchest Democrats in the world, but the two of them just got along great. He was good friends with John Kennedy prior to Kennedy becoming president. He always worked well with both sides of the aisle, and he always wanted to work on compromise and team building throughout Congress to get things done for the country. You know, he doesn't get a lot of credit, but that's okay. Since President Ford's passing, there have been so many people who have said that he was one of the, maybe not one of the greatest presidents, but he was certainly great for what he needed to do and what he needed to be when he assumed that office after the trials and tribulations of Watergate.
James Kratsis is the deputy director of the Gerald R. Ford Museum in Grand Rapids. And for Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.
And a quick correction to our earlier statement, Gerald Ford was not the nation's shortest-serving president. He was, however, the only person in U.S. history never to be elected vice president or president who went on to become both.